This is the GOAT Level Podcast with your host, the GOAT, the legend, the hero, Van Pugh.
Wow. The NBA playoffs has been amazing. It just has. It's crazy how I'm just getting back on the mic after my New York trip last week. It's like a week and a half ago, and I'm just getting back on the mic. Wow. That's crazy. I mean, a lot has gone on since then, but I guess let's start with the Knicks. Well, I was in New York for that game, and the Sixers won. It was one of the best games I've ever seen in person. Back and forth. Knicks make a run, Sixers make a matter of fact, the Knicks came out slow, but they battled back, took the lead, grabbed control of the game, and then the Sixers just kept staying in it. And then they took a 9-10-point lead. The Knicks battled back. They took a lead. And then it looked like they were going to pull away at the very end because OG Anunoby started cooking and he got a steal and dunk. And also when McBride hit that shot to go up 5, I did my, you know, throat slash, it's over. I thought it was over. I mean, the Knicks fans were all standing up around me. I didn't even want to stand up. I mean, I didn't feel like it. They were all standing up beside me and in front of me. I couldn't see. But they sat right down when Tyrese Maxey got that 4-point play. And then he hit that 3. When he hit that 3 from half court, pretty much, boy, them Knicks fans were stunned, and I was crying. I was dying laughing. I was like, oh, shit. I was pointing to the court. I was like, oh, my God. I'm a Wizards fan. I just wanted max drama. I just wanted a good game. I was in town for that game. I stayed in town an extra day to see that game, and it did not disappoint, even though Embiid didn't show up till overtime. But nevertheless, Tyrese Maxey had 46. I just knew that he was him.
He is him.
This guy, man. Every time they got behind and the Knicks were getting a run, he would get to the rim. He would get a layup or he would shoot a 3. Those 3s were backs breaking. He was the only one. Well, Tobias Harris in the first quarter did pretty well. But Maxey really was the only one that was shooting well. And that's all they needed, man. Man, that was something, boy. That was a heck of a game. And, man, the atmosphere was crazy. And it was so many celebrities. I mean, come on. Let's start with the former players. Patrick Ewing, Latrell Sprewell, Marcus Camby, Carmelo Anthony. Like, man, all of them, John Starks, they were all sitting together. I just couldn't believe it. And then, this is the second time in a row Cardi B and Offset was at the game. Do they live in New York? Do they? Even the picture that's gone viral with Offset and an attractive fan, that was taken in New York. Do they live in New York? I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Cardi's from there. So I would understand if they lived in New York. But I would assume they live in Atlanta or L.A. Maybe they do live in New York. I don't know. But that's the second time I've seen them at a Knicks game during a weekday. But this one was the playoffs. So this was more understandable. Like, Hawks and Knicks back, what was that? November 2022. Like, that's different. Like, that, I'm trying to think. That's different. That was a regular season game on a random Wednesday. I couldn't believe they were there. I mean, come on. Fat Joe was there. Spike Lee was there. It was ridiculous how many celebrities were there. Like, it was really a who's who. It's just part of the mystique of the Garden. And I'm glad I was able to see it. Jalen Brunson. is amazing. And he's on a stretch where he's looking like 2001 Iverson. And, I mean, from game, was it 3 or was it 4 of the Knicks-Sixers series all the way to tonight with the game 3 of the Pacers-Knicks series, he kind of had an off game. But he's just been on a tear. And he's had multiple 40-point games, including the one I was at, game 5 at the Garden. He had 40 points in that game. It's just that he knows how to get to his spots and get mid-range shots. And also, he picks his spots when to drive and get angles and get to the rim. He just took over in the fourth, but it just wasn't enough. Couldn't stop Tyrese Maxey. And that was the key there. In Indiana, the Indiana series, they gritted out game 1. Like, they just hit timely shots. Game 2, they got a million offensive rebounds. And they just out-hustled and outworked the Pacers in that second game. They almost beat them the third game. I was literally just watching it. But the Pacers, they just hung in there. And then Nembhard hit that 3 to put them up 3. And I don't know what the Knicks were doing to try to tie it up. I mean, Jalen Brunson tried to draw a foul. Kind of what Tyrese Maxey did at the Garden in game 5. Yeah, he tried to do that and it didn't work. And Pacers hit the free throw, game over. Now, I thought the Sixers could win game 6 in Philly. But it's just that the Knicks, once again, offensive rebound and timely shooting. Once again, he did that. And they did that. And that's why they won another close game. These guys know what to do when it's crunch time. They hit the boards hard and they make shots. This is one of a kind. I really did not think they would get past Philly. And they did. And they are literally a shot away from going up 3-0 against the Pacers. But they didn't. They fell short. But this team, I see why New York fans really love this team. They're just a blue-collar, tough team. I mean, even game 2 of the Pacers series. I mean, I saw Hartenstein getting rebounds, getting on the floor, getting dirty. Josh Hart's always going to get double-digit rebounds. DiVincenzo had 35 in game 3 versus the Pacers. Damn! This guy's the truth. He is the truth. Especially in game 3. Actually, he was struggling in the Sixers series. But he's done okay in the Pacers series. And then he just went completely off in game 3. A lot of respect for Dante DiVincenzo. I mean, when they put this team together with the 3 Villanova guys, they had Ryan Arcidiacono too at one point, so they had 4. But when they put these guys together, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. Because, I mean, Jalen Brunson, he was not yet a star or a superstar yet. And then on top of that, Josh Hart and DiVincenzo were just up and down role players. Julius Randle, yeah, he's cool, but then they lost Julius Randle to injury. Like, I didn't think much about this team, but this team is something special. And the way they fight in every game, it's going to make them incredibly hard to beat. This team can go to finals. The way they playing, this team might go to finals. But it's going to be tough. Eventually, not having OG Anunoby and Julius Randle is going to come back to bite them. I don't know when. It could be this. Nah, I doubt it's going to be this series because it's clear they're better than the Pacers. But let's assume Celtics or Cavs. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's going to come back to bite them. It really could. It has a good chance of happening, but I don't know if it will. Man, it's been fun watching the Knicks. Every game is dramatic. and high intensity. And it's just so fun to watch them. What else do I want to talk about with the NBA playoffs? Okay. Oh, I forgot to talk about Pacers-Bucks in the last... I think I did. In the last episode. Dame... Giannis not playing the entire series. Critical. Dame not really being a factor after game two. Critical. Especially him getting hurt and being out the last... What? That was a six-game series. Out the last three games? Ugh, critical. It's just they weren't themselves. I really applaud the fight of Bobby Portis, Patrick Beverley, Chris Middleton, and Brooke Lopez. They came to play. They won game five pretty easily. But ultimately, the Pacers were always a bad matchup for them, regardless of if Giannis and Dame played. But it was definitely a bad matchup when those two guys didn't play. So it makes sense. So it makes sense that the Pacers beat them. It's just, man. The whole Patrick Beverley thing is... it's hilarious and it's... Should I say weird? I don't know. It's hilarious, but it's also a shake your head. What are you doing? Why you have to take it that far? What did the fans say to make you that mad? It's just crazy. He, like, the first time he threw the ball in the stands, hit that girl, I'm sure he felt bad, but he was determined to punish whoever said what they said. And then he beamed it at that guy, and then security got in between and just stopped the fight. Man, he was wilding. You ain't supposed to do all that. And then on top of that, the thing with the female reporter, he was dead serious about, can't talk to me if you're not subscribed to my podcast. At first I was like, man, first of all, I can't believe he was serious. Like, you should have seen his face. He was dead serious. But I was like, he's being greedy. He got 100,000 subs. What does it matter if a few freaking reporters subscribe to the pod? But I guess that's how you grow. You got to shamelessly advertise your product. And that's what I admire him for in that situation. It's just too much, and it came off as disrespectful. And thank God he realized that, and he apologized, and those two made up. Obviously, it was a woman reporter that's really respected. You know she respected when you got Jemele Hill, Rachel Nichols, Mina Kimes coming to her defense. I forgot her name, but obviously really respected in the sports journalist circles. So, yeah, Pat Bev messed with the wrong one because a lot of people came to bat for her. So, but they apologized. But he apologized and they made up. And I really like that. That's my favorite part of that whole story because it was just insane. I don't know if she subscribed to the pod. And I've listened to two episodes since that happened. I know. I feel bad. I feel bad for doing that. Because, you know, how he treated those people. But the dude is entertaining. I couldn't resist. Especially the episode about his reactions. When you look at the episode, he took responsibility. He took responsibility for his action and promised to be better. I'll take it. You know, he manned up and took responsibility. I'm cool with that. Now he's suspended 4 games. And we don't even know what team he's going to be on. I think being suspended 4 games in the beginning of the season is a nothing burger, but they had to do something. Jamal Murray, I knew he wasn't going to get suspended when he threw ice packs or heat packs on the floor and did the money. So I knew he wasn't going to be suspended, but I knew he was going to get fined. And I thought he was getting fined at least $250,000, but they came up with $100,000. Well deserved fine. He was tripping. And now, ooh, he killed him. And now he's getting booed in Minnesota because of his antics. And he's not suspended. Those Minnesota fans probably feel that he shouldn't be playing right now. He should be suspended. But here he is. So, yeah, we're going to boo you for that. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. That kind of got off on a tangent here. But, I mean, the Pacers, the way they pass the ball and shoot the ball is fun to watch. Siakam going off, what was that, game two? It was just a masterclass. It was a masterpiece, virtuoso. I still don't think they're going to beat the Knicks. I didn't think they could. I mean, I just thought there was a chance, but these guys almost went down 3-0. Like, the Knicks got it. Now, will they beat, I assume, Boston? I don't know. Could they beat the Cavs? I mean, this is a size disadvantage, but they have beat them. I mean, we'll see. I also watched the Magic and the Cavs, Game 7. You know, I made time to watch it. I get hyped for Game 7s, man. It's nothing like it. Even this game, the most disrespected series of the first round, was the only one that went 7. Go figure. I said before the series started that this could be a 7-game series. And it was. And Paolo Banchero is here. Like, 38 and 15?
What?
He killed it. He had 24 at halftime. He just did whatever he wanted. Got to whatever spot he wanted. You put someone on him too small. He posts him up or he finds angles and kind of uses his body against that defender. Against bigger defenders are too slow, so he uses quickness. Or, you know, he's able to get them step backs off. He got a total package. Like, he's good. Jalen Brunson is a superstar. And it took me a while to see the vision. I think a lot of people did. I mean, I don't know if this is because Julius Randle is out and it's just giving him more of a usage rate. But he could have did this with Julius Randle there too, because Julius Randle disappears sometimes as well. But it's been a pleasure to watch Jalen Brunson in this playoffs. And I loved watching him and Tyrese Maxey go at it in New York at the Garden. It was so much fun. It's an experience I will never forget. And I had a few cute girls sitting beside me. But, of course, I was too afraid to talk to them. Typical. It's okay. Like, especially the one that was sitting beside me and she came alone. Like, I really fumbled that one. But, nevertheless, it was a great experience. And I'm glad I was able to make it. Cavs Magic. Bro, Cavs Magic. I watched game set. I just had to. I couldn't resist. Cavs Magic, I watched that, Game 7. I made sure I took a break from working to watch that game. I got me some Pizza Hut, set up at the crib in the basement, and I just sat back and watched the show and just, man. Like, the Cavs came out swinging. Donovan Mitchell looked like he wasn't going to pass the ball, and then they slowed down and the Magic just took over and they was up 20. I thought it was over, but then the Cavs, what the Magic messed up on is they let the Cavs cut the lead to 10. They might have cut it to 8 by halftime. They let them make a few shots, get some confidence, and then that just set up an amazing third quarter by the Cavs where it just wasn't just Donovan Mitchell scoring. It was Strus. It was LeVert. If LeVert gets on my nerves because he is so talented and a great one-on-one player and can take most players off the dribble and is so quick and crafty and got a good mid-range shot. But he is so inconsistent and sometimes he plays bad enough to lessen his time in the rotation. I definitely noticed that because I play FanDuel and he just doesn't. He had some games where he scored in the teens as far as fantasy points. That's just unacceptable. A guy that talented. But he showed up in game 7 and they needed him. Donovan Mitchell, game 6 and 7, was just, you saw a guy that did not want to lose and he did everything he could. He went beast mode. I could not tell that he was dealing with an injury. I couldn't tell. The way he was balling out, boy, we saw peak Donovan Mitchell. Like, we saw the Donovan Mitchell that's a perennial all-star. For a series that was an afterthought, it had a great finish. And Paolo Mancaro has arrived. I might have said this earlier, but he has arrived. He, man, if he play like that, he 38-13, like I said earlier. If he play like that, bruh, he going to be a perennial all-star too. In Orlando is going to be a team you're going to have to deal with in the East as Boston gets old. Miami gets old. New York, I don't know how good they're going to be in the future. Indiana, same thing. Like, it's just, they're going to be right there if they keep this core together and Bancaro establish himself as an all-star. Like, this, I can see it. I can see the Carmelo Anthony comparisons. I can see it. But, man, I was very impressed with Bancaro. Very disappointed in Franz Wagner. I just know how it feels as a hooper when you just can't get anything to fall. You can't get anything to get into the bucket. No matter what you try, it just doesn't go in. It's just unfortunate it happened in a game 7. They needed him, and he just couldn't get it going. And it's just the opposite of game 4 where he went completely off. So the Cavs escaped that series. They proved that they were the better team. I knew it. I was right that the home team was going to win every game in this series. It's like the opposite of the Minnesota-Denver series where it's looking like the road team might win every game in this series, which doesn't happen often. The only time I saw that is, of course, the Nats and the Astros. I'm sure it's happened before, but the Nats and the Astros is the most memorable example where the road team won every game. That might happen in Minnesota, Denver. But before I get to Minnesota, Denver, like, how about the Cavs? I mean, yeah, the Celtics got them up out of their game 1. Everyone expected that. No surprise there. Game 2, I sat there and watched the whole game 2 with my guy Zach. In the first half, yeah, the Celtics did what they were supposed to do. But the Cavs were hanging in there because what I noticed while watching that game, they have some matchup advantages. Their guards are kind of too quick for some of their wings, and they can get to the rim kind of easily. Now, Derek White is a very good defender. Like, he was locking stuff down. He might have to guard Donovan Mitchell. But then again, that's where the problem lies, because what do you do about Evan Mobley, who is a matchup nightmare? I mean, what's the name's too slow? Al Horford's too slow for him. The rest of them guys are too small. What do you do about Evan Mobley? If Evan Mobley is assertive this series, this is going 7, and the Cavs might win. Oh, and Donovan Mitchell in the second half went off. Like, he shows – he is playing like a top 10 player, kind of like Jalen Brunson. But he's kind of playing like a top 10 player right now. That just gives the Cavs a chance. And in the second half also, Darius Garland got going. And once again, Caris LeVert – was decent. Like I said, whenever someone other than Derek White was guarding Caris LeVert, couldn't stop him. There's just so many matchups they can take advantage of against the Celtics, because I'm kind of surprised. You know, I thought, you know, the Celtics was this great defensive team. But, oh, and Darius Garland's really quick too. But it just looks like the Cavs are just a really quick team that can get to the rim and drive and kick pretty easily. And then you got, and then you have little to no answer for Mobley. Like, Mobley is just his own worst enemy. Jaylen Brown was loafing. Jason Tatum just did okay. Jason Tatum definitely got to step up and take control. Drew Holiday was just okay. Derek White cooled off in the second half. That's another thing. Every time I watch the Celtics game, they mention how great of a three-point shooting team they are. They were terrible in the second half. So, yeah, this is going to be a series because the Cavs match up with them better than I thought they did. And if they can continue to have the Celtics shoot terrible from three, they're going to be okay. They're going to be okay. But Boston's still a 7.5-point favorite in Cleveland, which that's what I thought the line was going to be before I watched game two. After watching game two, the Celtics shouldn't even be a favorite game three. But they've been a better team all year. So I can see why the oddsmakers is like, let's slow down for a second. The Celtics still the better team, and they're still probably going to win game three. That's what the oddsmakers, and the oddsmakers are smart. They are. So they do a lot more studying than I do. But, yeah, if game two is any indication, this is going seven, and I'm here for it. And I would love to watch game seven. Whatever the hell I'm doing, I could put it to the back burner, and I can watch game seven because I got to see this because I know it would be a good game. The Wolves and the Nuggets, I mean, the Wolves blew out the Nuggets the first two games. Well, the first game was back and forth. It's just the Wolves pulled away because, you know, Anthony Edwards, he is a part of I'm Him in the Entertainment with Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell.
Facts.
He is him.
43 in game one. Just spectacular. And, of course, the Jordan comparisons just were out of control again, and I get it. He was like that. He only had 19 in game three. He did pretty good in game two. But, yeah, game three, the Nuggets kind of shut the noise down. Because I was, like, after game two and watching Minnesota dominate in Denver, I was like, this series is over. This series is over. But, of course, Coach Malone addressed that after game three when the Nuggets won by 27. I barely watched this game because I was very tired. So I couldn't watch it. The Nuggets dominated, and Jokic had almost a triple-double. And Jamal Murray, he was tripping in game two. He just lost it. Throwing stuff on the court, screaming at the refs, barely even scoring. He just had a meltdown. And then he got fined $100K. I thought he was going to get fined, honestly, bro. I thought he was going to get fined $250K, but he didn't. He kind of got off. A lot of people thought he was going to get suspended. I think that's why he got booed in Minnesota every time he touched the ball, because they feel like he should have been suspended. He acted the fool. They feel like he shouldn't even be playing. So they're like, man, we can't stand this guy. He a crybaby. He almost got Gobert hurt because he threw a freaking heat pack on the floor. They don't like this guy. And all he did was score 24 points, 18 in the first half. Like, this guy responded like a champ. That's how the Nuggets did. They responded like champions. I won't be surprised if they win game four. I think this series is going 7-2. And I love it. Two game sevens? Oh, yeah. I don't know about the Thunder and the Mavs. I still think the Thunder are the better team, but the Mavs have been there before. So it's experience versus youth and talent. Overall talent. They just got more weapons than the Mavericks have. But with PJ Washington playing the way he playing, this is going to make it a very interesting series. So I already talked about Knicks and Pacers, Cavs, Celtics. I just love the NBA playoffs right now. It's so much fun to watch. But I'm on my grind, so I don't know how much of this I'm going to watch. But all these series look like they're going to be interesting, and they're not going to be over quick. And that's just great TV, and it's just great for us sports fans. And I absolutely love it, and I can't get enough of it. I wish I could go back to the Garden for another playoff game, but I don't have that type of money. Boy, I am not Spike Lee.
Come on, man.
But I'm still him.
He is him.
Hey, shout out to the Washington Nationals. They are cooking. They are playing some baseball. They are 19-18, which is notable because remember, the 2019 Nationals who won the championship were 19-31.
Facts.
Which means through 50 games, they are most likely going to have more wins than that championship team did. And in 2020, well, that was only a 60-game season. Once again, started 19-31. And this team is 19-18, and they're rebuilding. You gotta love it. We got a great collection of veterans we've imported, like Senzel, Rosario. Rosario just hit a home run against Toronto. I guess Joey Gallo, Jesse Winker. These guys have been spectacular. Trevor Williams. And we got young pitchers playing well, like Mackenzie Gore. Josiah Gray's been hurt. Jake Irvin's been okay. Mitchell Parker. Who the hell is Mitchell Parker? He even came in there and he's been balling. Like, these guys are playing hard. And Davey Martinez is doing his thing. He is proving why he needs to stick around. Like, he's proven why the front office believes in him and has kept him around this long. These guys are balling. And you know, when the Nats start winning, these new era Nats, you know people going to start talking about playoffs. I don't have the soundbite, but I will soon. Playoffs? Already? Nah, we talking about playoffs already. They're right in the wild card chase. When you're over 500, yeah, you guys, I guess you start talking about wild card. But I want to wait and see, because the last time we did this, we got swept by the Marlins and we just fell apart. I just want to wait and see. I know we won a series against the Blue Jays. We split with the Orioles. We almost swept them. But they came back and, you know, got us in extra innings, blah, blah, blah. Man, I wanted to go to one of them damn Orioles games, and they were both good, and we won one of them. I'm sick. But Tuesday had kickball. Wednesday had to work. So, sucks. Sacrifices. But it is what it is. This team is balling, and I can't wait to get back to Nats Park. I still plan to go to the Twins game on, what's that, May 23rd, and I hope to get an upgraded seat because it's a 1 o'clock game on a Wednesday, so I'm hoping tickets are dirt cheap so I can sit behind home plate or I can sit in one of these clubs where it's all-you-can-eat food. I hope so. I really do. You know what I'm saying? We'll see. We'll see. Probably got to grind and grind for me to make that happen. But I want to make it happen, though, because it seemed like it's possible. Like, the Terra Club and Diamond Club tickets are going to be cheap. Like, they're already just, because usually they're hundreds of dollars. The last time I saw them, they were $80, $90. They could be even cheap. They could be even cheaper. Once we get close again, I mean, 1 o'clock in the middle of the week against an opponent nobody cares about. That is just prime for cheap tickets, and I'm trying to go. And I'm sure my Indians fans or my Guardians fans would be rooting for us to beat the Twins. I mean, that was y'all division rivals. So hopefully, you know, we take care of business, because they can't be that much better than us. are they better than us the way we're playing? I wouldn't mind. You know, I would love to have Gap Gowdy go to the game with me, but, you know, that's just wishful thinking. And it's the middle of the week, Wednesday. Like, getting anyone to go with me would be difficult. So I'd rather hang out with myself anyway. So it's all good. Anyway, love what the Nats are doing. Hope they keep it up because, man, we just been watching this losing baseball for like the last 3-4 years. And, you know, it's good to see some signs of progress. And we haven't even called up Dylan Cruz or James Wood yet. Like, y'all might be in trouble. We haven't even called those two up yet. Oh, and Trey Liscombe, like, it's been a roller coaster with him. But he's been stepping up. So I'm like, yo, like, oh, and CJ Abrams is the man. So, listen, y'all in trouble. I like what we're doing. This rebuild is finally getting on track. And you know what I'm saying? Once Dylan Cruz come up, y'all in trouble. Y'all in trouble. I'm telling you, y'all are in trouble. Hey, listen. Oh, James Wood already in Rochester, right? Yeah, he already in AAA. Yeah, James Wood, Dylan Cruz, once we get them guys up, oh boy. I don't know. Like, the Braves are just, they've been good for freaking 3 decades. So there's nothing we could do about that. But the Mets, the Phillies, the Marlins, they're going to be in trouble. It's going to be Nats and Braves just like it was 8, 9, 10 years ago. Or even 5 years ago. Trouble. Y'all in trouble. Now to OU softball. Oh, boy. They lost to Oklahoma Fake 2 out of 3 games.
It's a complete crap.
Belt to behind. 6-2, 6-3, 6-2, looking like a tennis loss in a major.
Come on, man.
But thank God they came back and they beat them on Sunday. Because, I mean, it's tradition that graduation weekend, we play Oklahoma Fake and we whoop their behinds. Especially when I was in school. They weren't good when I was in school. They were good my freshman year. Then after that, Sooners were so much better than this team. We didn't lose to them at all. And then I think it was whenever they got Kenny Gaskill or whatever his name is, that's when they start getting good year after year, and they right behind us in the standings and everything. And then all of a sudden, we both top 5, and we either go to their place or they come to our place. But we usually beat them. But this time, they got us. And that transfer they got, number 27, she had big hit after big hit. And she hit that home run off of Kelly Maxwell. Boy, I was sick.
Game over.
Broke my heart. The dream of Kelly Maxwell in crimson and cream going against her own team, her old team, old coach, in our new stadium and shutting them out and destroying them turned into a nightmare because she gave up 3 runs on both days that she played against them. And then in the third game, she didn't play and we won. That is a complete nightmare. They bent Kelly Maxwell over and I'm sick about it. But that's okay. Brighter days. Because of course, Kelly Maxwell bounced back, punished Kansas, punished BYU, and Oklahoma Fake lost to BYU 7-2, belt to behind. Never put it past Oklahoma Fake to have a big bedlam win and then completely fall apart the next week. It happens almost every time. Happens almost every time. Except maybe 2011, but they got snaked by the BCS, so we couldn't see what they could really do on the national stage. I mean, they beat Stanford, but I mean, it was a good win. You beat Andrew Luck, but it didn't mean anything. You didn't win the title. You finished in third. Oh, boy. I'm going to miss y'all. Not really. I mean, at least they're keeping the series going for one more year in softball. What did softball do that football didn't do to keep this series going, Bedlam? That's terrible. So we'll play them in Oklahoma City next year. I cannot wait. Both teams are probably still going to be good. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I hope we see them. I hope we see them in the NCAA tournament because we coming for them. And Kelly Maxwell is going to figure them out. Or she probably knows what to do. Like, it's Kelly Maxwell. This is her fifth year in school. Like, of course she knows what to do. Of course she's going to bounce back. And it's pretty cool that she chose us because she wanted to be a veterinarian. I'm not really an animal person, but I still think that's pretty cool on her part. That she has pretty good goals outside of softball. I would love to get to know Kelly Maxwell. I'm pretty sure she's a cool person. But yeah, got cooked by her old team, but bounced back in the tournament. And now we got Texas, who they're number one in the country. They just run ruled Baylor. And you know, it's just, it's going to be tough. They beat us 2 out of 3. Now they had to really work for them 2 games because we left runners on base. And one of them games, they had to beat us at the plate. They had to get us out at the plate to beat us. So, and we beat them 3. We punished them 3. But anyway, the best 2 teams in the country, Big 12 tournament championship. Boy, I can't wait. I think it's today. But I'm going to be watching the MAC softball championship. Because that's why I'm in Ohio. I'm in Ohio to watch that. Because I was very impressed with Miami, Ohio. Because opening day at Love's Field, this team, Miami, Ohio, comes into Norman, goes up 3-0, and hits all these home runs, and they almost pulled off the upset of the century, but thankfully, my Sooners were up to the task, and my girl, Defensive Player of the Year in the Big 12, Kenzie Hansen, came to play, and she came through for us. Thank God. But this Miami, Ohio team is serious. Like, half of their freaking starting lineup is first team all MAC. They only lost 1 game in the MAC the whole season. They still lead the country in home runs by 20 runs. Carly Spade, I'll be surprised she's not All-American. She deserves some national recognition because she has 35 home runs and bats over 400. Damn! Kate Kobayashi has 28 home runs herself. They're just a really high-powered offense. And I saw that immediately when they went against Ohio. Carly Spade, second pitch, out of here, blasted. The problem with them is, against Ohio, they did nothing after the first inning. And when Carly Spade, when they're the Death Star part of their lineup, Reagan Bartholomew, Carly Spade, Kate Kobayashi, the next time they went up, they went 0-for-3. They didn't do nothing. And also, I missed the Toledo game because I was having dinner and watching Celtics and Cavs with my good friend. Missed that game, and plus they were in a massive rain delay. But anyway, they went to extras with Toledo, who got cooked by Ball State. But you know, shout out to Toledo, though. They were about to get run ruled, right? In an elimination game. 6th inning. About to get run ruled. Down 8. Got absolutely destroyed by Michaela Timmons, who I really like and I'm a big fan of now. They came back and turned a 9-1 deficit to 7-9. And it got to a point where I thought they were going to walk it off. I really thought they would walk it off. Because it was 9-3 in the bottom of the seventh. They scored four runs. I was like, oh, man, I want to see this comeback. I want to see something historic. But, nope, Ball State handled business. They moved on to play Ohio, the second best team in the MAC, and then they beat them. I'm pretty sure they beat them. Yeah. Well, when I checked, it was the seventh inning, and Ball State was up 5-1. So, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that they won. Matter of fact, let me double check real quick. Yep, they beat them. Yeah, they beat them. I'm kind of shocked because Ohio, they were number two. They were the second best team. And they had beat Ball State the first time 8-0. That's crazy. And they came back and eliminated them, which is crazy. I kind of feel bad for CeCe, number five, on Ohio. Because, you know, I met her mom in the stands. And her mom was going crazy, bro. She got a really supportive mom. That's pretty cool. CeCe played well, though. Our center fielder for Ohio, she said she played well. She had a hit. And she had a walk. She wasn't bad. I'm mad her best game of the season was against Georgetown.
Come on, man.
I've never watched a Georgetown softball game, but I still want my DC teams to do well. Except the Commanders. Kind of reminds me of, man, what was that, 2013? Was it 2010 that Georgetown lost to Ohio and Georgetown was like a second seed? Just reminds me of that. But anyway, man, I don't know if Georgetown is good at softball. Anyway, it was good to meet her mom. I should have talked to her more. Shocker. This is just my life. I'm just leave it there. It seemed like she was a cool person, and she was very supportive of her daughter. But they're eliminated. I was looking forward to seeing them today in the championship, but they're not going to be there because they got eliminated by a team they just beat 8-0. And they had their best pitcher there who was first team All MAC. Make it make sense. But then again, Ball State is on a hot streak because Ball State, because when I got there, right? Because I was there like 6 hours, seven hours watching softball. When I got there, Ball State was losing to Central Michigan 6-4 in the sixth inning. And it looked like they were going to lose. And then they get two people on base. And then they have a hit to pretty much clear the bases because girl hit it in the gap. And then the center fielder versus Central Michigan fumbled it and pretty much almost got everyone home. The girl that hit it got to third. And then the next batter came up, hit it in the gap, like a blooper in the gap, and scored the girl at third. And then they held on with their pitching at the end. And I'm like, man, what? Like, this team, I could tell they was on a hot. And then I saw how they came out against Toledo. And I'm like, this team is on fire. Now, can they beat Miami, Ohio? I don't know. Miami, Ohio is a juggernaut, and they're gonna be dangerous in the NCAA tournament. Sure, they're not playing as well as they used to playing right now, but they're still the best team, and they are a juggernaut, and they got way too much firepower on offense and underrated pitching. It's going to be very hard for Ball State to win. But they're on fire, and they got the best catcher in the conference. So I don't see – yeah, I can see how they can make it a game, but I don't think they're going to beat Miami, Ohio. Miami, Ohio is just way too much. But I had fun, man. You know, if I had more money, I would go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame again because I had fun the first time I went. But – tickets are $43, and you know what? I'm going to just save my money. It ain't that serious. I'll try to go in July before or after my visit to Columbus. Cause I want to go back, man. When you're in Akron, it's hard. When you're in Akron or even in Cleveland, it's hard not to escape the Canton and go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Like, it's hard. So we'll see. We'll see. But I've enjoyed my time at the MAC Championship. It's so laid back. You know, the tickets are somewhat cheap. The concessions are somewhat cheap. The players, you know, they play in the game and they come in the stands and watch the games with you. And then you will see them outside the stadium. It's just so late. You can come in and out of the stadium. It's not crowded. It wasn't crowded. It's just so laid back. It's just so laid back. I love it. You know, I love that event. I would love to try it again. But, you know, we'll see. All right, I'm about to go through some of these topics real quick. What the hell is a Korn Ferry Tour? Because I've been playing PGA golf. I've been playing, no, not on the tour. I'm not on the tour. I suck at real golf. I'm only good at mini golf. And even that is questionable. But I've been playing PGA DFS to try to win some money. I just, something I've got competitive about and got passionate about. So I've been playing that and listening to these podcasts and stuff. They always mention the Korn Ferry Tour because you always have some like unknown person in the Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, some unknown young person in these fields, and the people who do the podcast mention their time on the Korn Ferry Tour. I was like, man, what the hell is that? I found out through a little research that it is their version of the G League. It's their version of the minor leagues for MLB. In Korn Ferry, I thought it was just some made up name or maybe some nickname of a folk hero. No, it is a consulting firm.
What?
Before that, I think it was web.com. So I'm like, wait a minute. You can sponsor this dang tour? You can sponsor? I don't know anyone in this tour. I've never heard of any of these people, by the way. But you can sponsor this tour with the right amount of money? What? It's just another thing I hope I would love GOAT Level to do, to be able to sponsor the tour, the developmental tour. I would love that. I would absolutely love that. Oh, also, it's kind of like, it kind of got a Premier League EPL soccer component to it, where if you're not playing well on the tour, you can get demoted to the Korn Ferry Tour. Korn Ferry is a funny name, bro. But hey, I got to look up their company and see why they got that name. You know what I'm saying? And I kind of envy them because obviously they're making enough money to sponsor a PGA tour. So obviously I can't laugh but so much. But, you know, that's pretty cool though. It's pretty cool the program they got. I got to do more research on it and I got to actually pay attention and see who's playing in it and who's good and stuff. So I can, you know, get to know some of these golfers before they move up and they start cooking in the PGA tour. In the main tour. Or maybe see them on Live. I don't really pay attention to Live, but you know what I mean. But it's good to know what the hell the Korn Ferry Tour is, because I'm like, they keep mentioning it and I don't know what it is and it got a funny name. But now I know. And it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Toronto WNBA. So WNBA is expanding finally, because my complaint was, what is going on? Because I was talking about this with a writer one time. Oh, I got to put that in my Lyft storybook. But I was talking to this with a passenger. And I was like, it's crazy how fast the NWSL has grown and is expanding. But the WNBA is loafing. And just like that, right after I said that, it was announced they were getting a team in the Bay Area. Then it was announced they're getting a team in Toronto. Everyone is wondering when they're going to get a team in Philly. That has to be next. Because every time, bro, I see that comment a lot. When you going to get a Philly team? When you going to get a Philly team? It's just, especially a lot of my women on Twitter that are Eagles fans, they are ready to support this WNBA team. So you already got some fans that really, you know, want this team there. And I think it'd be a nice rivalry between the Mystics and Philly. The Mystics and the whatever the Philly team is. That'll be a nice little rivalry. And I guess with New York too, because I know New York, by the time Philly gets a team, I'm sure New York will be rebuilding. So that'll be a good little rivalry to start up when you get a Philly team. I'm sure they're working on it. I'm sure someone's going to step up and do it, because the demand is there, obviously. But I also saw some comments that kind of like rolled their eyes and like, man, we don't even like women's basketball. Like, we don't even need that in Philly. What are you talking about? So maybe in a broader scope, maybe it's split on whether they want a WNBA team. But there is some demand there. And I would love to see a team in Philly. But the fact that they're going to Toronto is pretty cool. It seems like they're excited. And all I'm wondering is they're are they going to get Juju Watkins? Are they going to get Flaje Johnson? Because that would be a great way to introduce that new franchise with a guard combo of Flaje Johnson and Juju Watkins. That would be insane. But I was looking at projections, and it looks like they're in line to get Reagan Beers. And, you know, I think the world of her. Like, I watched her one game and was very impressed. And she was third-team All-American. And now she's with the Sooners. And she's probably going to be the focal part of our offense. So she's going to be very good. So will she be – I'd rather she come to the Mystics, by the way. But I don't know. If Shakira Austin keep playing the way she playing, we might not need her. So, I mean, I would love to have Reagan Beard. I would love for her to make that transition from the Sooner to the Mystics. But that'd be pretty cool if Reagan Beard's kind of kicks things off in Toronto. But so Reagan Beers, Flaje Johnson, Juju Watkins, that'd be pretty cool if they're one of those three, or even all of those three, end up in Toronto. Very excited to see what the WNBA is doing. I'm sure more teams are coming. It's about time. They've been stuck at 10 to 12 teams for years. I remember when, you know, they had teams like Detroit and San Antonio and Sacramento. They had a Utah team at one time. They had a Cleveland team at one time. So that Houston team, oh, that's another team people want to bring back. Bring back the Houston Comets. I'm sure there's a lot of demand for that team too. So Houston and Philly, definitely got to have those teams. So let's see what the WNBA does. I'm sure that's in the works. And the growing popularity in women's sports helps, especially with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. The demand to see them is through the roof. I can tell the Mystics tickets for those games are unreal. So, I mean, not unreal. They need to move those two Sky games to Capital One Arena. But so far, it doesn't look like they will. So they're going to stay at ESA. And they're going to be hell of expensive, because everyone wants to see Angel Reese just as much as they want to see Caitlin Clark. So that's going to be a tough ticket to get, the Chicago Sky. And you know, the Sky and the Fever are coming to D.C. back-to-back days. Props to whoever has the money, or it ain't that expensive, but whoever wants to, you know, spend the money and time to go see both of those. I wish I could. I would love to, but I can't. I probably got something to do. I know for sure that Thursday that they play, I probably got kickball. That Friday, I could probably do that Friday, the big game of Mystics and Fever. I probably could do that It's just, do I want to drop $100 on this game? I don't know. That's a good question. But the demand for WNBA is skyrocketing. And now you got a team in Toronto, and maybe they'll have a team in Philly, in Houston. I'm excited. And I'm looking at the college ranks. There's so many talented players. And there's some players I don't know about. I mean, you see, when I was doing the college basketball reference spotlight, you saw all those underrated players I was spotlighting. Like, there are plenty of them. And they're going to make the WNBA exciting to watch. And I've been watching the WNBA since 2002. So I love it. Maybe even earlier than that. So, you know, I've been knew this was a legit league. I've been watching it for years. So I've been watching it for decades. And people are just now catching up. And, you know, the popularity is that there's no talent. I think they can get to 20 teams by the end of the decade. I think they can. And that's just going to make things very, very interesting. Okay. Rest in peace to Jimmy Johnson. No, not the Cowboys coach like I originally thought. Because I was like, wait a minute. It would have been breaking news. It would have been all over Twitter and sports. And I was like, why is no one talking about this? No, it was Jimmy Johnson from the 49ers, who no one knows about unless you're either a big-time 49ers or NFL historian, or you just are from back in those days and you watched him play. I know nothing about him, but I kind of want to, like, do some research and watch some of his highlights. And that's another reason I wanted to go to Pro Football Hall of Fame. I wanted to see his bust. I wanted to go in that room, see Unc, see, you know, Shannon Sharp, see Chris Carter, see freaking Edgerrin James and Peyton Manning, and see Jimmy Johnson. Wow, he was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 1994. And I'm like, how do we not know about this guy? Because he played on the 49ers before they were a dynasty. So from 1961 to 1976. So he's pretty much Daryl Green and Deion Sanders before those guys existed in the NFL. He's a Hall of Famer, 5-time Pro Bowl, 3-time All-Pro, All-70s team. Damn! Bruh, how did we not know about this guy? Why wasn't he talked about? Why hasn't he been talked about? Why isn't he talked about as one of the best DBs ever? Why? I'm convinced only people who are above 60 years old or 49ers fans know about him. Because nobody else knows about him. And that's a shame. Because when you got these type of accolades, I feel like we should know about you. That's crazy to me. That's crazy to me. We didn't even know about him until he died. That's wild. It's just, this is just as bad as us not knowing about Pearl Moore or freaking Lynette Woodard. Or maybe I should just do my own research and just study up on the history of the game, the games I watch, and I know some of these people like Jimmy Johnson. Because what the heck? Because it's just totally... Because I would have known, because I was like, wait a minute, Jimmy Johnson played for the 49ers? That doesn't sound right. And it wasn't right. So I'm like, I'm sure Jimmy Johnson, the coach, played football. But I forgot for who. But he isn't this Jimmy Johnson. Hall of Famer, All Pro. I'm sure he didn't have a career like him. So, man, rest in peace. My condolences to the family. It's a shame we didn't know more about him, because it seemed like he had an amazing career, and who knows what he's done after football. He probably did great things after football, and we don't really know about it. So rest in peace to him. It's just a shame. We should know more. I guess the last thing, man, people are trolling Kalani Brown on Twitter for how she looks. Someone said she looked like a tranny. Her and Tierra McCowan. Oh boy, y'all gotta just stop. This I ain't gonna say too much about it. But Kalani Brown, I really liked her in college. She played for Baylor, so at any time she played against Oklahoma, I was like, I like her. I didn't say anything about it because my friends were making fun of her. But every time they were making fun of her, I was like, dang, bro. Like, I like her, bro. Like, relax. But I just let them go because I'm spineless. And I don't want them to shift their focus to me. But, yeah, I really liked her. So it's weird when people say crazy stuff like that about her. And, you know, Tierra McCowan looks good, too, because she got thicker. So, but anyway, those two, Tierra McCowan, Kalani Brown, Twin Towers, just adds a dimension to the Dallas Wings that makes them harder to beat. You already got Arike Ogunbowale, one of the best scoring guards in the league, and you got Satu Tabali, who is a great scoring wing. Like, this team is loaded. There's a reason why they made it to the conference finals. Can they break through? I mean, they got the tools. I mean, they kind of remind me of Minnesota to a certain degree. Minnesota Timberwolves, because I know the Lynx are kind of rebuilding. But the Timberwolves, it kind of reminds me of them. A little bit. Although, I don't know, Kalani and Tierra McCowan, they kind of play similarly, and they don't like, they're not like Karl Anthony Towns. They just take people off the dribble and shoot threes, but they got that Twin Tower thing like Gobert and Towns, or even like, you want to go back, Tim Duncan and David Robinson. So I love it. The crazy things on Twitter. Once again, yeah, I got to leave my girl alone. Always like Kalani Brown. Always a fan. It's just a shame she always played for the enemy team. It was Baylor and now it's Dallas. Like, ugh. Whatever, though. Anyway, GoldLevelTees.com for all things Gold Level. Oh, and Angel Reese came to their defense saying they are beautiful black women, because they are. So, hey, shout out to her, Angel Reese. Angel Reese is just amazing, okay? She is a star, and she's just one of the faces of the WNBA, and she hasn't even played a regular season minute yet. But in the preseason, she's been decent. So, same thing with Caitlin Clark. So, those guys are going to take over the league, and I just hope that they keep it together. I just hope that they continue to work hard and stick in this league, because it's a shame that all this attention to bring in this league and they freaking flame out. I hope they don't. I hope they keep doing their thing. Anyway, GoatLevelTees.com for all things Goat Level. You already know that I'm out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Goat Level Podcast. Make sure you share, subscribe, and get money.